Hi, everyone. Our next guest, I'm very excited to introduce. She is a legend. Her name is Dr. Margaret Paul, and she has been teaching classes and seminars, I don't believe this, 53 years, right? But amazing, amazing work. She's written several books, and one of her books I know sold over 1 million copies. Which one was that, Margaret?
That was Do I Have to Give Up Me to Be Loved by You?
Yeah, amazing. Over 1 million copies, which is huge in the book world. She also has written several other books, including Healing Your Aloneness, Inner Bonding, and the recently released book, Diet for Divine Connection, which I'm really looking forward to diving into that. She's been on Oprah. She's part of a group I'm part of called the Transformational Leadership Council. So, Barbara, welcome to our summit. We're really excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. And so the title, this is the Global Energy Healing Summit, and the title of what we're going to be talking about is The Power to Heal Yourself, which I know a lot of people are going to get huge benefit from. Talk about your journey to discovering this. I heard you talk about that a little bit before, probably about 6 months ago when I was in a meeting with you, but how did you come to this work that you've been doing for so long now?
Well, like so many people, I grew up in a very dysfunctional family, and I was kind of a mess as a kid. And when I was five, my parents took me to a psychiatrist. My mother did, you know, she figured all the problems were my fault. And so I remember him saying to me, tell your mother not to yell at you. She was a screamer. She was a narcissistic screamer. And I remember thinking, I'm only 5 years old and she's not going to listen to me. You tell her.
Can you do it for me?
Yeah. And my next thought was, I could do a better job than you. And that's when I decided at five to do this work. And I became a traditional psychotherapist, which I practiced for 17 years, but I wasn't happy with the results at all of my own. I had a ton of my own therapy and working with others. And that's when I started to pray for a process that would really work fast and deep with people. That's when I met the co-creator of Inner Bonding, Dr. Erica Chopich. She had half the process. I had half the process. So we had to meet. And Spirit kind of put these six steps together for us. And that was 37 years ago. So I've been practicing it since then. It's completely changed my life and the lives of tens of hundreds of thousands of people around the world that practice it. And I'm excited to share it.
Yeah, that's amazing. And also very cool how two people came together with, you said you had half, she had half, but you were able to work together. Because that's tough too sometimes where you come together like my ideas are the right ones, but you're able to co-collaborate and really have a healthy meeting of the minds and created something better than either one of you could have done on your own, which is really—
Oh, that's right. No, we work very well together. We still work very well together.
Yeah. So let's talk about inner bonding. So inner bonding, what exactly does that mean?
Well, it means that we need to really learn to connect with ourselves, with our true soul self, and with our higher guidance in order to be able to share love with others. You know, so many people want love. They want to feel love. They want to, and they think that it's about getting love, but it's really not. It's about sharing love. And we don't have love to share if we're not inwardly bonded with our own inner self and our own higher source of love. And so, you know, I don't think love is something we generate. So it's something we open to. You know, love is the universe. Yeah. And we don't create that. We open to it. But most people think that their source of love is another person rather than their higher source. And so they're always trying to have control over getting somebody to love them and approve of them and tell them they're okay, rather than learning to fill up on the inside so they have love to share.
Well, this is going to be really great for so many people because, you know, we've heard for many years you need to love yourself and need to love yourself, but people don't know how to do that. I would venture to say like 1% of the population of even that people walking around right now truly love themselves, probably less than that, right? I mean, it's
probably not very many, unfortunately.
Yeah. And the result of not loving yourself is what? What shows up when you don't love yourself or have that inner
balance? Well, first of all, you have feelings like anxiety, depression, you're afraid of rejection, you feel alone and empty inside, you might feel shame and guilt and jealousy. Your relationships are very challenging because we attract at our common level of self-love or our common level of self-abandonment. Yeah. And so if we're abandoning ourselves, which most people do and they don't realize it, we're going to attract somebody who's also abandoning themselves. They're going to expect us to love them. We're going to expect them to love us. We don't have any love to share, and it's pretty much of a disaster. So relationships don't work when we're not loving ourselves.
Yeah. And what happens when we do, and we'll jump into the process a little bit, what happens when we do love ourselves? What does that feel like? What's that experience? How does it shift our life?
When we love ourselves, first of all, we start to get who we really are, which is a unique expression of the divine. We start to value, we start to see our unique gifts and what we're here to offer the world. We start to feel full inside, and that gnawing anxiety or depression or guilt or shame goes away. That gets healed when we're bringing love inside and sharing our love rather than always trying to control getting it.
I love it. And you said the word unique a couple times. So many people are just trying to fit in, be like everybody else, but we're not. We are unique. And when we don't feel like we're like everybody else because we don't prize that uniqueness, we don't feel good, you're giving a different message here, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I had to come to accept that I'm an alien. I mean, you know, I've got very different ways of viewing things than many people. And I really value that. I don't see it as, oh, there's something wrong with me because I'm not like everybody else. Yeah. In fact, I'm always looking for more and more of the unique gifts. You know, it's an ongoing process to discover the unique gifts that we've each been given.
Yeah. What are some of the ways you're unique? I'm just curious. You describe yourself as an alien. It kind of just like, what do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, the whole inner bonding process is very different than what other therapists do, because it's really about learning to be present in your body, take responsibility for your feelings. It's not about, we learn so many ways to communicate, to get somebody else to do it for us. And this is completely different. Yeah. And I think I'm unique in that one of the gifts that I've had is that I've always been able to tune in to when somebody is operating out of alignment with themselves. I've always known that. Like my parents, they were just clueless. They just didn't have any idea regarding what love is. And so I think that I came in with a gift to understand love and to be able to teach that to others.
That's awesome. So you discussed it a little bit earlier, but this is one of the most important things we're here to do probably is learn to love ourselves, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Because then we uncover these gifts. Okay. Then we find the creativity inside. We find the ability to manifest who we are in the world. The world needs each of our gifts. We're here for a reason. Yeah. But when we're ignoring ourselves, abandoning ourselves, we can't find those.
So when you actually start loving yourself, things show up that you might not have even been aware of?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, it's been amazing to me. I mean, sometimes I feel like, oh, my God, this part of me has been kind of out in the ethers all this time because I couldn't embrace it early in my life. And all of a sudden it's showing up. And it's like, wow, this is amazing. And you start to feel fuller and fuller inside. You know, so many people, when I work with them, I say, what are you feeling? They say, nothing, I feel empty. And that is so sad. They have no idea who they are.
I'm curious, from all the people you've helped, when they were younger, were those gifts potentially popping up? But then that's where the shame or, hey, this is different, this is weird, we got talked out of it, or how does that work?
Oh yeah, very, very often. In fact, so many of the people that I work with were the kind of aliens in their family. In other words, they were the more perceptive ones, the creative ones, the caring ones, the ones able to love. And many of them were in families that were not at all able to love. And so their families were threatened by them, and they became the scapegoat in the family, as I did. And very often, if somebody is operating just out of their ego, they're very threatened. When a child comes in with a lot of light, you know, a lot of gifts, they just want to do anything they can to smash those. I mean, I remember my mother telling me when I graduated high school, well, honey, you don't really have to go to college. You know, what you just really need to do is get married and have kids. I mean, she did not want me to thrive.
Yeah. And I think not that she didn't love you down at the core, but she had abandoned herself, right? That was that the cause of that?
Well, yeah. And the thing is that when people abandon themselves, they may think they're loving, but they have no love to offer.
Oh,
you see, so they can say, I love you. But to a child like me, I never felt it. I mean, I could tell the energy of love, and it was not there. So they could say all day long, they love me.
Yeah.
But there was no experience of love.
Okay. Okay. Hey, talk to us about self-abandonment. What does that mean, and how does it affect our relationships, but also even our health?
Yeah. So there's basically four major ways that people abandon themselves. One is when we were young and there was pain, we had pain and we couldn't manage it because our parents didn't know how to manage their pain. They couldn't help us with ours. So we learned to disconnect from our body, to dissociate from our body and be up in our head so as not to feel. So most people are operating, they're talking heads and they're not in their body, which is where the feelings are. So, of course, we can't take responsibility for our feelings if we don't even know that we have them.
Yeah.
So being up in our head is one form of self-abandonment. Another, so
when you're in your head, you're not feeling, you're just processing and thinking.
You've
got to be in your body.
Got to be in your body to feel, but also you're mostly thinking from your lower left brain, which is where that ego wounded part of us is. And that's a program part. And it's thinking like a program. Oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, I can't trust this. Oh, I mean, it's just a program. So those kinds of thoughts have no reality. And yet so often we're acting based on those thoughts, which if you look around the planet are causing enormous problems on the planet, acting from these program fears and false beliefs that we have. And that's why it's so important to learn to access our higher self, our source of love and truth, so that we can act from that rather than from fears and false beliefs.
Yeah.
So staying in our head, one form. Secondly, judging ourselves. Most of us grew up with a lot of judgment, whether from parents or other caregivers or siblings or peers or teachers or religious leaders. And we absorb how those people treated us and how they treated themselves. And this part, this lower left brain, that ego wounded part of us, treats us the way that they treated us or the way they treated themselves or both. So it's going on and on. You're not good enough. What's the matter with you? You're such a jerk. You're never going to make it. You're never going to be as good as that person. You can't compete. You might as well let it, you know, just on and on. Well, of course, that's a form of self-abandonment.
Mm.
Now, the third way is that many people learn to numb out and look at all the addictions we've got. We've got substances to sugar, to food, to drugs, to alcohol, to processes, you know, social media, being on their phone, pornography, television, work. I mean, all kinds of ways of just numbing out and avoiding your feelings.
Yeah.
And then the fourth way, which really affects relationships, like I said, is we make somebody else responsible. It's like if we had a child, instead of saying, well, I want to love this child, we're just handing the child away and saying, no, I don't want to take care of this child. You do it. It's your job. It's not my job.
Right.
Well, of course, that makes us feel inwardly rejected.
Yeah.
And then it creates a fear of rejection. So those are the four major ways. There's probably others, but those are the major ways that I see.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, and this is pretty prevalent. I mean, I noticed a couple of things you talked about, like, yeah, I probably had that in my childhood too. So, the big thing for me was probably living in my head too much, I think, in my childhood. So that's interesting. So you've got this process called inner bonding that allows us to bond back with who we really are, why we came here, and feel that love? What are the steps to doing that, Margaret?
Okay, well, inner bonding is a six-step process that really, when you practice it, it teaches you how to love yourself in so many different ways. So step one, of course, is learning to get in your body, because if you're not, you know, learning to love yourself is mostly about taking responsibility for our feelings. It's also about taking responsibility for our health, our well-being, our relationships, our organization, our finances. But a lot of people can do finances or organization, but they can't take responsibility for their feelings. So step one is learning to take the journey, the big journey from your head to your heart and your soul, to get in your body.
That is a big journey.
Yeah, it's a big journey.
It's a huge journey. Yeah, not right. Very far, but it's a big journey.
It's a major journey. And to actually want that responsibility, you have to want the responsibility. So that's step one. Step two, in inner bonding, there's only two intentions to choose from. And intention governs everything. Either our intention is to have control over getting love and avoiding pain and being safe, which is where this lower left brain is and where most of us are, or the intention is to learn to love ourselves and share our love with others. So in step two, we breathe into the heart and we consciously choose the intention to learn about loving ourselves, starting with loving ourselves and then with sharing our love. So that's step two. Part of
Hey, Mark, before you go to step three, how do you get more into your body? Because I think that's something that I had to really take some time to learn. I don't know if it's a male thing, like living in your head. And I had my father passed away when I was very young. So I remember just like overly processing everything. But what's one way that people can get back more into their body?
Well, I had the same problem, because when inner bonding came in, when spirit kind of brought it together for us, and I realized, oh my God, I spent my whole life in my head. I'm very tuned into other people's feelings.
Yeah.
You're there for them, but I have no idea what I feel about anything.
Yeah.
So what we teach people to do is to use their breath, follow their breath to get inside your body. It's not that hard to get inside.
Yeah.
The hard thing is remembering to do it.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't remember. I was so used to being in my head. I mean, it's not hard to bring your focus down and see what's going on physically. Feelings show up physically in your body, like your gut gets tight, or you feel an emptiness, or your chest is heavy. I mean, they show up physically. It's not that hard to breathe in and notice what's happening.
Yeah.
But it's hard to remember. And so I got this little, at that time, it was a long time ago, I got this little gadget called a motivator that I could set to buzz against
me. I remember that little, it looked like a little pager and it would
set. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So it buzzed like every 5 minutes and every 10 minutes and every half an hour. And if, eventually I trained myself. I also put sticky notes around to remind me. And I wore a rubber band to remind me. I did all sorts of things to remind me. I mean, now people can set their cell phones and alarm. But it just does take practice. Like anything worth learning, it takes practice. It's just, I mean, it's easy. Like I said, like if you take a few deep breaths and you go inside and you notice what's happening physically, you start to notice your feelings, because feelings do show up physically. But to remember to do that when you've been in your head your whole life, that's not easy.
When you say feelings show up physically, and sorry for getting stuck here,
that's okay.
Chronic pain, like a lot of people coming to this summit potentially have chronic illnesses, chronic pain. I'm a huge believer that the pain, the chronic pain, is typically not physiological. It's mental, it's emotional, it's spiritual, showing up in your body to distract you, or maybe to make you focus. I'm not sure, but how do you look at pain in the body?
No, I do look at it primarily that way. I mean, sometimes there's just physical pain. You've been in a car accident or something like
that. Acute.
But much of the time, what I do with people is the same process. I say, okay, breathe into the pain. Go through the process of what is this pain telling you? Very often, our soul, which we can call our inner child, will bring about illness, will bring about pain when it has no other way of getting our attention.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. And that happened for me, because before interbonding, I was really sick. I was life-threateningly sick. Mm-hmm. And when interbonding came in, I did this process as an anger process where I let this inner voice yell at me. And yeah. one of the things she said was, how sick do I have to make you before you pay attention to me? Yeah. So I got it. You know,
Uranus was a gift. It was a gift. It was really saying, hey, look, pay attention, because we're pretty close to the, you know, I can't make you much sicker, right?
That's right. Get much sicker, you're going to die. If you don't want to die, start paying attention to me. Start taking care of me the way you take care of everybody else. I don't exist for you. You got to start being present for me. And that was very life-changing for me, because I got better right away. As soon as I started to pay attention and take care of me, I got better.
Yeah, because your energy changed, exactly.
Oh, yeah, completely.
So amazing. Well, and I hope people are listening to that, right? It's not just Margaret or I've had those situations too. It's a lot of illness is based around that inner part of you trying to wake you up.
That's right.
Because nothing else is working. And so it's saying, well, you know, like what Margaret said, what else do I have to do? And don't let it get to the point where your inner child, you said, or that part of you is saying that, like, just notice it, thank it. And in this process that Margaret's helping with, I think, will be super helpful. So we did the first two steps. What's the third?
The second step, the other part of the second step is not only moving into the intention to learn, but it's also learning to open to your higher self, because we don't manufacture love and compassion. We open to it. And so in step two, we're inviting in. I invite in love and compassion and wisdom and strength, because that higher self is always there. And really, I teach people how to easily access that so that they can bring that in. So that's what we call becoming a loving adult. When we're open to learning and we're connected to their higher self, we're a loving adult. Now, in step three, we're asking the feelings, the pain. What am I doing? How am I treating you?
Yeah.
What am I telling you? What am I not doing? We want to know how we're treating ourselves is causing this.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we go inside and we let the pain, physical pain, emotional pain, we let it answer from inside. So let's say in step one, I go inside and I'm depressed. I'm just numbed out and depressed. And I do an inner bonding process and I go in and say, well, what am I telling you? How am I treating you? So this depressed part of me might say, you don't even know I exist. You've got me in a cage.
Yeah.
You know, I have no freedom to be who I am. You're constantly telling me that I better do this right, and I better do that right, and I better impress this person. I better perform this way. But meanwhile, you don't hear me. You don't pay attention to me. I am locked up in a cage. How do you expect me to feel? Mm. How else can I feel but depressed?
Yeah.
When this is how you're treating me. So there's a lot of information here.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can get. And then we go a little deeper. We go into this ego wounded part of us, because that's the part that's put us in a cage.
Right.
And we say, you know, there must be a very good reason that you're putting this beautiful soul in a cage.
Yeah.
What's the point? And there's where we start to discover our belief systems, our false beliefs. And that part might say, well, I have to keep you in a cage, because otherwise you're going to run wild. Or the only way we can get approval is if I keep you under wraps and in a cage. We have to be a certain way. We have to act a certain way. If we don't get approval, then we're not okay. And so it's all kinds of beliefs that we uncover. And once we understand that in step three, step four is, we again go to our higher guidance and say, what's the truth about these beliefs and what's the loving action? Because this is a process where we need to take action. And when you
learn what's the truth, what's the truth is just
about the beliefs that we're recovering.
Yeah. And then when you say what's the loving action, that's the action you take to dispel the belief.
No, it's the action you take that's loving to yourself, because once you take loving action enough, the false beliefs get healed.
Oh, okay.
See, they get healed with loving action towards ourselves.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. And so, you know, we can't just talk ourselves out of these beliefs. We've had them for years.
Sure.
But when we're actually loving ourselves, taking loving action based on higher guidance, the beliefs eventually just fall away. What's happening with this is that we're actually developing new neural pathways in the higher brain for the loving adult. Most people don't have a loving adult. I didn't have one when I started this process. And so as we actually take the risk, because it feels very risky, the wounded self, the ego is all about survival. Oh no, don't do that. Oh no, I'll die. And when we actually take the risk of taking the loving action, that's when we start to heal these false beliefs that are so limiting to us.
What's an example, Margaret, of a loving action? I mean, I'm sure there's thousands, but what's one example?
Okay, I'll tell you from my life, what was so life-changing for me at that time that I told you, because I was such a caretaker, I was taking care of everybody, my parents, my kids, my husband, everybody, and I was dying. And so when I asked my higher guidance, what's the loving action? The loving action was to stop taking responsibility for them and their feelings. Mm-hmm. And to start just practicing this process and taking care of my own heart and soul. Mm-hmm. Now, that was extremely challenging because I had been doing this my whole life. I had taken care of everybody. And I was so scared that if I didn't caretake them, that I would find out that the people who said they loved me really didn't.
Yeah.
That my parents didn't, that my kids didn't, that my husband didn't. They just loved how I was caretaking them, but they didn't actually love me, and that they wouldn't support me in taking care of myself. So it was really scary. And I had to make two decisions. One was I was willing to be hurt. That was a loving action. I was willing to be hurt. And the other was I'm willing to lose everybody else, but I'm no longer willing to lose me. I'm not willing to die.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I had to make those solid decisions.
Yeah.
Then I started really not caretaking them. That was a loving action, to not take responsibility for them and to start letting my kid out of the cage.
Yeah.
You know, being me, being my alive self.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, everything I was afraid of happened. My parents disowned me. My husband left after 30 years, and two of my three kids were furious at me. So it was really hard, but I got my health back.
Yeah.
My work started to skyrocket, and I did get support from those. This is how you find out who really loves you. When you start to love yourself, those people who love you say, yay, it's about time.
Yeah.
We just want you to be happy. And those who just want you to caretake them will be mad at you.
Uh-huh.
But of course, that was a loving action for me. It was life-saving.
Yeah. It's amazing. Very courageous, too.
It was really hard, but boy, so glad I would do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we've got two more steps, and I have a question about spiritual guidance I want to ask you too.
Yes.
Because I know that's something you believe in. But so we've done step with the loving action. So this is step four.
Yeah. So in step five, then you take the action. You take the action. You do what you're guided to take, even though it may be hard, even though it may be, it can be all kinds of things. Go back to school, quit your job, speak up for yourself, change your diet, start to exercise, get more sleep. I mean, it can be all kinds of things. Speak your truth to somebody, you know, all kinds of things. And it's often not easy.
Yeah.
But until we take the loving action, we're not telling ourselves that we're worthy. We're telling ourselves we're unworthy if we don't take the loving action.
Right.
And then once we do, step six is we go back inside and see how we feel. And if we've taken a loving action, we feel a deep sense of relief.
Awesome. I love that.
We start to feel worthier.
Yeah. And then life really starts to transform and change.
Yeah, that's right. It does. And what happened with me is that I became able to manifest. I could never manifest before that. And then all of a sudden, that was amazing.
Yeah, things really took off. You know, it's interesting because this younger generation now seems a little bit more in tune to being who they really are. And, you know, you see them like leaving jobs. And even my daughter, 28-year-old daughter, had a great job in private equity. She left that just to start her own thing. She wasn't just going to keep doing what she was doing because it was paying great and everyone said you should do it. She literally is building her own new development project and, right. and taking risks, but really feeling fulfilled. And do you see that? Do you think this younger generation is a little bit more in tune than our generations were from you know?
Yeah, I think so, because I think so many of them did not see their parents being happy, no matter how successful they were. They weren't happy. They weren't joyful. They weren't fulfilled. And they're saying, you know what? The big house, the car, the job, this and that, that didn't make them happy.
Yeah.
I got to go a different way. And I'm really happy to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. So you say it's not hard to connect with your personal source of spiritual guidance. And I know that when you help people, you tap into spiritual guidance.
Right.
A lot of people, it's a concept they'd like to be able to believe in. They like to have the ability to talk to their guides or get guidance, but they think it's, you know, something that only a few people can do.
No, and everybody can do it. Everybody
can talk about it a little bit.
Okay. First of all, it's built into us. Our right brain is built in to access that. So it's natural to be able to do that. It's just that we've shut that down. We're a left brain culture, you know, and so we have to rekindle that ability. But spirit exists at a higher frequency than we operate at. Like a hummingbird's wings is very fast. If we operated at that higher frequency, we wouldn't see each other. So our bodies operate at a lower frequency so we can see each other. Spirit's at a higher frequency. We have to be able to raise our frequency in order to connect with spirit. It takes two things. One is the intention to learn about loving yourself. That's very powerful. That is essential in raising your frequency.
Yeah.
Now, the other has to do with the frequency of your body. If you're eating junk food, you're eating sugar, you're eating, you know, the factory farm food, all the processed food, that's very hard on the body, and it lowers the frequency. It's actually dumbing people out. It's just, you know, it is so, so awful for the body. It's creating so many illnesses. And so even if you're open to learning, see, this was so interesting for me because I was a sickly kid. In my early 20s, I started to eat all organic. I read Silent Spring, and so that was really a long time ago.
Yeah, and you're one of the pioneers.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, at school, at college, they told me I was a health food freak and all that. Yeah. But, you know, I got a lot better, except that when I was in my mid-40s, I started getting sick again, but I got a lot better. And so I've been eating that way for a very long time now. But then when inner bonding came in and I discovered this thing about the intention to learn about loving yourself, suddenly I could access spirit so easily, like at will, anytime I wanted. So I thought, oh boy, all people have to do is open to learning and they can access their guidance, except it didn't work that way. So it took me a while to connect the dots that it takes both the intention to learn and keeping your body clean, organic, natural for the frequency to be high enough.
Nice.
And when people do that, that's when they can attain that at will divine connection.
Yeah. You know, talk about what that connection's like. So I do talk to guides. And I used to think it had to be like super literal, you know, as the left brain working, but it's almost like just little pops of information.
Right.
For me anyways, but talk to people what that feels like communicating with that spiritual guidance.
Yeah, it is like pops. It's like I can ask a question and then I might not get the answer right away, but if I just let it go, it'll pop in.
Yeah.
It pops in. I think it pops into the third eye or whatever, but it pops in. Or I can just be like out in a walk. It's easier for me in nature being out on a walk. And all of a sudden these profound ideas pop in, you know, an idea for a book or an article or something about a person that I need to know. It'll just pop in, but they pop in when you're open.
Yeah.
See, so if you're open to learning and you're eating well, then they'll pop in. But I'm always feeling not alone.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So many people feel alone. You know, so many people are living their entire life literally surrounded by people even, but feeling alone. So
no, that's right. When you have this connection, a really interesting thing has happened in the last couple of years. The person that I was connected to most in my life was only for the first 13 months of my life, which was my grandfather, my paternal grandfather.
Yeah.
And we left New York, came to LA, and I never saw him again. But I remembered him when I was 10. And I started remembering more and more about the kind of love that we shared, which I never had with my parents. Now, a couple of years ago, I started to play word games with my best friend because it's supposed to be good for your brain.
Yeah.
You know, as you get older, to play word games.
Yeah.
And she had suggested it, and I said, you know, I'm not good at word games. I can never see words. She said, that's okay. Let's just do it. She could see them like that. She could see 7, 8 letter words so fast. I could barely see 3 letter words, but I started to do it.
Yeah.
And over time, all of a sudden, big words were popping in my mind.
Oh.
And I didn't even know if the letters were there for the words, but they always were.
Ah.
And as I did it, I realized my grandfather plays word games with me every evening.
Nice. It you got is, a little extra advantage then, huh?
Oh, amazing. And I knew that he loved to do crossword puzzles because somebody told me that.
Yeah.
So he's there, you know, he's always there. He's playing with me every night. And sometimes he'll pop things in, you know, and it's just so much fun. It's amazing to me. Words just pop in now.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so a lot of people though, don't trust that it's guidance because no, that's just a thought in my head. You've got to really be open and trusting and it won't feel real sometimes, but it's real, right? This is real communication. It's the way
it is. It is. And it's how I write. When I sit down to write, write an article or a book, I just sit down and say, okay, you're on. And then
me too.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah. Now I've got my new book's coming out in February and literally I'm like, hey, I need your help. Let's go.
Yeah.
But I'm not doing this on my own, right?
That's right.
It won't be near as good as if we get the team here. So
yeah, that's right.
I love it. So it's just so many answers can be had when we really realize we're not alone and we've got, you know, we think, well, we have people like you who are in the physical body that can help people. Also, we have all these non-physical sources of love and information that we can access when we love ourselves, right? When we feel worthy of loving ourselves. The interesting thing that you said, though, that I've never heard before, though, was the part about the way you eat also. I mean, I'm a big believer in that. Like, I eat organic. We had a chain of restaurants that were all organic, gluten-free, dairy-free, sold them prior to COVID. But I've never heard someone say, but it makes total sense, right? Because food is energy. So if you've got low vibration energy you're ingesting, it's got to get processed, right? And a lot of that low vibration gets stuck in the body. But that's really a good insight for people too.
Well, that's what my book, Diet for Divine Connection, is about.
Oh, okay, good.
Really tuning into the kind of food that will help your frequency stay up. It also goes through the embodying process in the second half. But diet is major today. I'm sure
that's your new book, right?
Then there's a book after that, the Inner Body Workbook, and a book just came out called 6 Steps to Total Self-Healing, and I have another book coming out in April called How to Become Strong Enough to Love.
I'm feeling a little inferior with my 3 books now. Where can people find these books? Where can they find your books, your work?
The books are all on Amazon. They can come to innerbonding.com. We have a lot of resources. Yeah, innerbonding.com. We have a lot of resources. We have a free course. We have many other courses. The books are there. Many ways of learning inner bonding. If they take the free course, they'll get the overview of it. Then they can take a course that I have called Love Yourself. I have a relationship course. I have a lot of courses that are very, very powerful for people to take. And also we have a facilitator training program. I work with people one-on-one with couples, but we have many trained facilitators who also work with people all over the world. And we have a community, Inner Bonding Village, where people can get support. So there's a lot of ways of learning.
So innerbonding.com is where you can find a lot of, or probably all of Margaret's work. And also Amazon, her books, Dr. Margaret Paul. You've got beautiful energy, a beautiful smile. Thank you so much for being with us. What's your hope for people that watch this? What is your hope for them?
Well, my hope is that they're interested enough to learn to practice the process so that they can really manifest who they are. They can have health, they can have well-being. One of the things that I do, you know, most people don't like to give their age, but I don't mind because it inspires people. I'm 82 years old.
That's awesome. Wow. Yeah,
and I have excellent health. Excellent health. And I don't have any of the illnesses that people my age have. And high energy. And so I really want, you know, I've been eating organic for 60 years. And I just really want to inspire people to do that, because not only for their own health and well-being and their connectedness, but for our planet. I mean, you know what's happening with the planet, with food and everything. So it's really important.
That's how I said.
Get inspired.
Yeah, well, at 82 years old, you're a poster child for your work. You really are a great example. Thank you so much. Lots of love to you. And thank you so much for being with us.
Well, you're very, very welcome. And I've enjoyed this time with you.